Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 12th, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts Lavendar and Anastasia. Tonight, Lavendar and I will be presenting Astrology 101 to help starseeds understand what an essential and valuable tool it is to navigate your missions. Without a basic understanding of daily planetary energies, it's like casting off to go to sea without a weather forecast, and that will leave you vulnerable. By understanding the effects of the planets, it helps you also to understand yourself and others so much better. We'll be giving you a phone number and the name of the main reference book you'll need to start tracking your daily transits also, so make sure you have something to write with as we get a little further into the show. We have a practice chart for you to use as a visual aid during the show on our site, so make sure you open a new browser window so you can still hear the show. Go to starseedhotline.com. Click enter, and then click the scrolling banner at the top of the home page to go to our headline news page, and that's where you'll see a chart for today's planets. And it will really help you to have the visual to go along with this. But first, at the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseed and sharing emails from our listeners around the world. And then we have a short visit from one of our Starseed listeners that will be of special interest to those with Atlantean connections, especially since the Sun at this very moment has entered galactic degree in Aquarius, known as the Mark of Atlantis. We'd like to thank Chris and Fiona for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments and questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you like our show, please click the follow button on our Blog Talk show page so you'll know about our upcoming shows, and it also helps to promote our work and guests. If you're new to our show, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge, and the entire site has been coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd like to thank Rose, Chris, Anastasia, and Tammy for their continuing great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go, and that might be a good idea to download this show because you're probably going to want to listen to it over and over again. We'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And remote healing sessions with Tammy are also available. If you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And please allow at least 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure that you get it in time. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Hello, ladies.
Good evening, everybody. Hi.
Hello.
Lavendar, are you there?
Well, I'm here, and I'm...
Hi, Arielle.
And I'm waiting for the news.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's my pleasure. Well, we have so much to talk about tonight, and I'll have to move through it fairly quickly. We've got an important program, but there's a lot happening, a lot I'm going to have to skip tonight, but I'm just going to highlight some of the most important stories that happened since we were together last week. And we want to start talking about the Sun. Now, today, the NOAA forecasters estimated that there would be a 15%
chance of polar geomagnetic storms today because they expected the solar wind stream to brush against the Earth's magnetic field. And so those of you in the northern latitudes after the sun sets later at night, you should be able to see good auroras around the northern latitudes. And there have been a number of fireballs that have occurred since our last meeting. There was a blue fireball that created what they say is it was a spectacular show over Ontario and Michigan on the 9th of February. And also on the 9th of February, it was reported that an emerald green fireball lit up the mountains in Colorado and Wyoming. So any starseed that happened to see those, I would love to hear from you and get some eyewitness reports of that. And in the area of the weather, there was a devastating tornado that tore through southern Mississippi that took homes right to the ground and injured at least 10 people. And there were 7 more twisters spotted in Alabama. And they say that the Weather Service counted 3 separate twisters in south central Mississippi on Sunday. And in southwestern Alabama, they reported a flurry of 7 tornadoes across 3 counties, including one that damaged 46 homes in Clark County. And altogether, they said that over 100 houses were destroyed or damaged. And so there were no major injuries other than what I've already noted, but an outbreak of tornadoes early on in the year, we're into February here, and the weather has been, it's what is becoming usual and normal, odd, unnatural. So early tornado season starting this year. Well, I've been telling you for a period of time now, number of weeks, about asteroid 2012 DA14, that big chunk of space rock that's going to narrowly miss the Earth. And everybody's watching it. It's coming in on Friday. And experts are suggesting that it's time for the average person to get involved in asteroid hunting. And the reason they're saying that is because asteroid 2012 DA14 is just one of about 100,000 asteroids that they say are coming our way. That's what they're saying. They say this one is going to miss us, planet Earth, by about 15 minutes. Just 15 minutes difference, and that's it. So anyway, everybody on Friday, give a heads up because we're going to get a very close flyby of a major asteroid. And I want to thank Jessica out there. Bless her heart. She sent me a wonderful, very interesting news story. It came from the internet site www.collectiveevolution.com, collective-evolution.com. And any of you interested in this story may want to go there and look this up. Now, it just came to me a few minutes before the show. I happened to get my email and found out that she'd sent it to me, so I didn't give a chance to give this any background checking or anything, so I'm kind of going to give you the summary of the story, but you're all going to be fascinated with it. And this website says that the story originated by a Dr. Ray Brown that aired this story on the History Channel. And along with them, I'm going to agree that there aren't enough facts to say whether or not these new findings are actually true, but nevertheless, it's very interesting and has some interesting elements to it. And so we need to just sort of hold this in abeyance, but darn, this is fascinating. You know, the Bermuda Triangle is just an otherworldly paranormal place that has been known about for decades, and it's kept scientists scratching their heads about what in the world causes missing planes, missing boats, missing people, and people have spent a lot of time looking into this, and now somebody thinks that they may know what it is. There appears to be a discovery that has been made by French explorers that is being considered by many to be a monumental discovery. They believe they have discovered a partially translucent, crystal-like pyramid rising up from the bed of the Caribbean, the seabed. They don't know its origin, age, and purpose. They don't know what it is. But these amazing underwater pyramid structures were first identified using sonar technology. And in terms of the size of this rediscovered pyramid, they say it is larger in scale than the pyramids of ancient Egypt. And interestingly, wow, on the top of the pyramid, there are 2 very large holes. Water moves at high speeds through one of the holes, causing waves to roll by forming a giant vortex. Isn't that fascinating?
Wow.
So now they're thinking about this, and they're wondering what the vortex, what it's doing, and that perhaps this is would explain what's been happening with disappearing boats and planes in the Bermuda Triangle. Isn't that fascinating? So
sure
all
is.
This new technology is just uncovering knowledge at such a rapid pace. It's just incredible. A week doesn't go by, but what there's just some fascinating discoveries. And speaking of Egypt, they have found a Luxor necropolis among Egyptian finds, and archaeologists are now finding, or now stating, that they have found a very important new finding in Luxor, on Luxor's west bank. And it's been recently discovered. It's a necropolis containing tombs that date back to the beginning of the third intermediate period, which they say is about 1075 to 664 BCE. And they're also excavating at other sites in Egypt, the Valley of the Queens on the west bank of the Luxor, in Al-Karga in the New Valley province, and Deir al-Manura, and another couple of other places that I can't pronounce. And they say that 2013 will see the opening of 13 archaeological projects, brand new ones, in various provinces in Egypt. So they are saying now that there is just a tremendous amount of history buried under the Egyptian sands that have yet gone undiscovered. And this is probably just the tip of the proverbial iceberg of what they're finding now. So they could probably send armies in to do digging, and goodness knows what they would find. Of course, as you all know, they take their time at that. And it's a matter of wanting to control the knowledge and information before the average person gets it. And there's a lot of, you know, rivalry between archaeologists. But nevertheless, a lot of things coming forward. And I want to make a point that Lavendar had said about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, as she was making some predictions based on alignments of the stars and her astrology expertise, that there would be a lot of archaeological developments in the coming months. And sure enough, she's been absolutely right. I usually don't cover a lot of those because there are so many, but she's right on. They're just uncovering stuff all over the planet. So Lavendar, bravo, you did good, because this is a significant one. This is big. Well, everybody has heard about Pope Benedict the 16th has resigned, and this has been all over the news. And you know, he was citing in his resignation statement that he was getting old, and he said also that due to the nature of today's world that had so many rapid changes, and you know, he didn't feel like he was able to keep up with it. But of course, we know that the Vatican and the Pope were surrounded by huge controversies recently, and the Catholic Church has taken huge hits, both with its membership and with the degree of exposure of what has gone on. So that's just been in the news. Now, Ariel, thank you for sending us this story. This came from Ariel, and this is wonderful. It's from the Huffington Post, and it's about a man whose name is Jadav Paveng. And he lives in the India's Assam region. And this came from the Huffington Post, who took it from the Asian Age magazine. But 30 years ago, this man was a teenager, and he began planting seeds along a totally barren sandbar near his birthplace. And they're saying that it was 1979 back then, and the floods had washed away a great number of snakes onto the sandbar. And all the snakes had died, and they died because they were in the heat and they didn't have any tree cover. And this young boy sat down and cried because he was so distressed at the damage for the lack of trees. So the young man went to see if he could get permission or get someone to plant trees, and the forest department told him that nothing would grow there. And they told the young boy, well, why don't you try to plant something? Why don't you try to plant some bamboo? And the young boy worked very hard, and he planted and planted and planted. He said, there was nobody to help me. And now that once barren sandbar is a sprawling 1,360-acre forest. It's home to several thousand varieties of trees and what they say is an astonishing diversity of wildlife, including birds, deer, apes, rhinoceros, elephants, and even tigers. They named the woods after this man. They call it the Molai Woods. And he's now 47 years old, and he's dedicated his whole life to this forest that he planted. He lives in the forest. He is isolated with his wife and his three children. They live in a small hut, and they make their living selling cow and buffalo milk. And it's just a wonderful story about what one person can do to nurture the earth and to follow their dreams and their promptings. I mean, this impassioned this young boy, and he actually did something to make a difference, not just for himself, for people, but for all the little critters and the earth herself. It's a wonderful story. Wasn't that great, Ariel? That's a feel-good story.
I loved it, especially, you know, my connection with the forest. And
yes.
It is that it's a prime example that one person can make a difference, and he's so connected to the land.
Oh, yes. Isn't it just, I mean, he's a part of it. And actually, they had some people had talked about cutting down the forest, and he said that they would have to kill him if they wanted to do that. The article said that he treats the trees and animals like his own children. And because people saw that, and because he took a stand, other people now are starting to help take care of the forest, too. So he stood up and said, no, you can't take it. And now everybody's chipping in, and they're planting along with him and helping care for it.
I just love that.
It's wonderful. It's so inspiring. I probably should have saved that for the end of the news hour, because the news segment, because what we have to follow isn't quite so cheerful. But I want everybody out there to know, all of you that are of childbearing age, and a lot of starseeds don't have children, but some do. And there's a move afoot now to vaccinate pregnant women in lieu of vaccinating infants. What they are wanting to do is to vaccinate pregnant women with DPT vaccines. And this is really, a lot of people in the natural health community are up in arms about this, because these vaccines are very dangerous. It's a government movement to vaccinate before birth. They figure that the vaccine will go through the mother, through the placenta to the baby. And they are considering that this is going to be the next move in childhood vaccinations, to start with pregnant women. And I just wanted to give you all a heads up about that. I know a lot of you are going to go, what? It is a highly dangerous thing to do. And so you might, if you are expecting a child, or you know someone that you love that is expecting a child, you might want to check with your state what the movements are for routine vaccinations now. And they're also recommending routine vaccination of adults over 65, despite the fact that vaccines are loaded with aluminum, which has been linked to Alzheimer's disease. So these are the things that individuals in high places are doing, which are not constructive, and we have just seen what individuals in small situations can do to make the world a better place. So there's a direct, stark contrast. But I wanted all of you to be aware of that, because I think that's important knowledge to have. Also, you know, we have heard about smart meters. You two have heard about those, right? Electric meters?
Oh, yeah.
Lavendar, Ariel?
Uh-huh.
And the risks of smart meters, they have been, 2,000 studies have shown negative effects of RF radiation, despite the manufacturer's safety claims. And people that have actually had the meters installed in their homes have reported symptoms such as headaches, insomnia, and tinnitus. That's ringing in the ears. And just a growing, burgeoning body of research is pointing to the health risk of RF and extremely low-frequency radio waves. And they show that radiation from cell phones have been linked to brain damage, early onset of Alzheimer's, senility, DNA damage, and sperm die-offs. And the RF signal from smart meters is much stronger, so they figure the effects will be proportionately more dramatic. In fact, the World Health Organization reversed its stance on RF from cell phones, now calling them possibly carcinogenic. And the American Academy of Environmental Medicine has called for a moratorium on the installation of transmitting utility meters. Despite that, recently, Illinois mothers were arrested for preventing the installation of smart meters on their properties. Naperville, Illinois is a suburb of Chicago. It has started the Naperville Smart Grid Initiative, which requires so-called smart meters to be installed in every house. And residents that have been opposed to this have been fighting this initiative for over 2 years. Now, one of these residents didn't want to give utility workers access to her backyard through her locked gate. And she is an individual that spoke in front of the city council to advocate against the meter program. When she wouldn't allow the utility people access to through her yard, they called the police, and they arrested her.
And this has been happening to other people that live in that area as well. They have a movement underway now to get these charges dismissed, and they are threatening to take it to the Supreme Court, whatever they have to do to get that stopped. But this is, the fight is on now for, they're trying to press these smart meters onto people despite the studies that have shown that they are very dangerous. Now, other states, and this is another tactic that they're trying, is they different states have different laws. There's just a patchwork of laws governing whether residents can opt out of smart meters or not. But if they want to opt out, a lot of states are charging for that. In California, they charge you $75 to opt out of a smart meter and $5 a month. In Nevada, it's $108 opt-out charge, and so on and so forth. In Oregon, everybody, if you live in Oregon, it's a $254 fee to opt out and a $51 a month charge. So it's really getting, we're really getting pressured from all sides about these smart meters, and it's something that you all need to keep your heads up about. Everybody needs to know about that, particularly that they're dangerous. And incidentally, you know those mercury light bulbs that they're trying to foist on us? The little curlicue light bulbs?
Oh, yeah.
You know, they are really extremely dangerous. And I was pretty amazed. I wanted to bring this up in tonight's show because I have a number of starseed friends that live locally. And I was surprised when I went to one of their homes the other day for dinner. And lo and behold, they had these mercury light bulbs in their chandelier. They really did not know about it. So everybody, you need to do some research on these new light bulbs that they are trying to promote. And I understand that many places it will be impossible to get incandescent light bulbs in the near future. So our typical old-time light bulbs will not be available, and we'll all be forced into mercury bulbs. So, Starseed, you may want to stock up on some safe light bulbs before they are unavailable. The mercury light bulbs are highly toxic, and you just need to read up on that a little bit to find out all that stuff about them. So, okay, having said that, I want to move on to Machu Picchu. There's been an incredible discovery. Here we go again, Lavendar, another discovery of an archaeological find, and this is in Cusco, and a researcher or an archaeologist discovered a door that was entrance to a strange shelter that was located in the heart of the city at the bottom of a big building, and it was a door that was sealed by the Incas. Well, they performed an electromagnetic survey, and they not only confirmed the presence of underground rooms and all kinds of things down there, but they also discovered deposits of metal and a large quantity of gold and silver. And no telling what type of information, written records, things like that that may be down in there. So we're waiting to see what they bring up from that. That could be a fascinating find, not only, of course, in riches, but there's other kinds of riches like knowledge. So that's pretty exciting. So isn't it wonderful that all this stuff is kind of coming to light at a time? Can you see all this polarity, sort of the darkness is pressing in and the light is growing and people are getting more informed, and the more educated, the more informed, the more awake people get, sort of the harder that other side pushes. It's a very interesting dynamic going on here right now with energetics. And speaking of energetics, maybe you all heard about that earthquake in the Solomon Islands that was 8.0, followed by a 7.0, and an earthquake in Shanghai that wasn't reported on the mainstream news, but nevertheless, that was a 6.0. And after the Solomon's quake, there was a huge increase in volcanic activity. So they're really alarmed by that. They don't know what's going on, except that they feel that it's abnormal, and they are attributing that to the plate activity and the constant earthquakes that's occurring in that part of the world. So they're keeping an eye on that. And also, here's one that's really, I don't know what to make of this, but in Salt Lake City, a researcher at the University of Utah is supposedly making waves in the scientific community because he says he discovered that deep within the earth, there is a dark red blob that could prove devastating. And what he's saying is that there are two rock piles the size of continents in the center of the Earth.
He says these are colliding, creating a molten rock the size of Florida that eventually could cause a giant eruption 100 million years from now. But that's very interesting because, you know, up until now, I don't know what they've been able to find at the core of the Earth as far with their equipment and all of the capabilities that they have. But wouldn't a striking discovery if there really are two rock piles at the center of the Earth colliding? Very interesting. I'd never heard or thought of anything like that happening. He says that at some point in the future there will be a mega volcano from this collision within the planet. And this is just to wrap up our show here tonight. They are also finding that there may be an Earth-like planet residing right in our solar system's backyard, only 13 light years away. Now, scientists are using data from NASA's planet-hunting Kepler Space Telescope, and it's watching more than, they say, 150,000 stars simultaneously. Now, the Kepler detects planets by measuring the temporary brightness. You know, they measure the light of it. And they are saying that there are a lot more planets similar to the Earth in our orbit or close to Earth than ever could have been imagined before. And they say that they think that the closest one is only 13 light years away. Isn't that something? I mean, we're so used to hearing astonishing information today, we kind of take that as with a grain of salt, but 25 years ago that would have rocked our world. For so long they taught that Earth-like planets, if any existed, would be so far away that they could never reach our planet, we could never reach their planet. They were talking huge cosmic distances, and now they're discovering not only are there so many Earth-like planets, but some of them are very, very close. Isn't that amazing?
And when you think about, okay, so before they said, oh, that can't happen, and now it's like, well, okay, now this can happen, it makes you wonder what's going to be revealed next.
Well, absolutely, and it just should teach, well, all of us. I mean, we're a different group of people here on this radio program and in our group. It, you know, we're not like average people, but if anybody is bothering to really read anymore and follow this, the average person isn't. They're glued to their television set or they're texting or whatever, unfortunately. But those that are watching and those that are paying attention are beginning to recognize that the science that they believed in, that told you, don't worry, just believe what we're telling you, we know what we're talking about, really hasn't known what it's talking about, what it's been talking about. And so, you know, we are really on the cutting edge, all of us who understand the part that consciousness interplays in our reality, that there are other life forms beyond this planet that interact with us. We are so far ahead of the curve in so many areas. And it's just interesting that science is bringing this forward now in the 3D for other people to understand. So we just need to keep on knowing that we're on the right track here and keep shining our light because it's going to make the difference. It's the only thing that is going to make the difference.
That's right.
So anyway, it's been an interesting week of news, and every week we have something new to look forward to. We do definitely live in interesting times.
Well, that's no doubt about that.
So I'm looking forward to the show tonight. It's going to be great to help Starseed chart the water, so to speak.
That's right. That's right. And thank you so much, Anastasia, for
the pleasure.
News. And we are going to go now to a little interlude here with a person named Molly McCord. And Molly had contacted Lavendar, and what she had to say was so fascinating to Lavendar that she invited her to come on tonight and share just a little excerpt of what she has discovered and what she's doing about it. So, Molly, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you making a little space for me to share this story. I'm excited to connect with other Starseed light workers and everyone who's interested.
Well, that's great, and the timing is perfect because today the sun's at the mark of Atlantis. So take it away, Molly.
Okay, great. Well, back in October, I had reached out to Lavendar for my star markings astrology session. And I'm an astrologer, so I knew a bit about my chart, but she gave me so much more, as anyone knows. And so she had conveyed that I had markings related to being from the Pleiadian headquarters, and it caught me off guard, but at the same time, it felt very, very right. And so maybe many of the listeners can relate to that, is that it really strikes you when something is right on. And so I didn't know what to do about it until last week. And it came out of the blue, but my spiritual team knows how to get my attention with food. So I was craving sushi, and I was directed to go to a certain sushi restaurant that was about 30 minutes from my house. My boyfriend was going to meet me there, and I arrived early, eager to eat, and decided to spend some time in the bookstore that was right nearby. I was told by my spiritual team to go to the back of the bookstore. And so as I made my way to the back, I came across something magnificent in the clearance section. It was a book on the bottom shelf in the corner, out of sight, titled Atlantis, Inspiration for the Future, written by Walter F. Laredo. I picked it up, 500 pages, so very hefty, put it on the counter and started flipping through all of these pages of illustrations, paintings, stories, and depictions of daily life in Atlantis. They were all hand-drawn by him. I was blown away. The room started swirling. I couldn't turn the pages fast enough. I just was wanting to absorb and look at all this information. And I felt myself needing to steady my body because the energy was so strong. So I remembered to breathe and found confirmation in the book that this was a message for me. Within this book of 500 pages, the only U.S. town that's referenced is the very town I live in. It's a small town. It's not even a metropolis. I live near Seattle, Washington, at the base of Mount Rainier. That is the town that's referenced in this book. And I've lived all over the globe. I've traveled many places. And for years, I've wondered, why am I still in this town? And it was like it clicked for me that this book had a message for me, an activation message of what my mission is and what I'm here to do. So I bought the book, and I went home and Googled the author right away because I was excited to connect with him. I wanted him to come on my radio show. I wanted to get more information. I found out that his book was published in 2005. He was an aeronautical engineer and designer of spaceship and spacecraft for Boeing and McDonnell Douglas. And his drawings, some of them dated way back to 1966. But it turned out that he had passed away in 2010. So I sat on the couch feeling disheartened and a little bummed out that I had found all this information and I couldn't share it with him. But as I was sitting on the couch, I felt his presence. I felt it strongly right there. It was very humble, respectful, and clear. And asking me that if I was interested in his information and what he brought to Earth, if I would help connect other people who are ready for it to look at this information too, so that we can all work together, we can all see these pictures, we can all remember more of these stories that are within our DNA. I want to give you a little bit about this information, that it has detailed hand-drawn images of ETs coming to Earth, of galactic life. It shows Atlantis cities and buildings. It describes how life existed down to how they made mud bricks. It has NASA quality designs of machines and tools. There is explanations about the Bermuda Triangle, such as it is a beacon of light for interplanetary information that advanced civilizations from other distant planets can see Earth through. The light from the Bermuda Triangle talks about Stonehenge. It talks about seven vaults of knowledge hidden within mountains all around planet Earth. It has detailed descriptions of bionic eyes, the artificial heart, mechanical flying horses, flying cars, on and on and on. This is an incredible resource for any starseed, and I want to repeat the name again because I'm sure some people want to write this down. It's called Atlantis, Inspiration for the Future. It is on Amazon, and I went back to the bookstore and bought all the copies that were left in the clearance section so that I could have copies to send to people who are interested, because I don't want this information to disappear. And so on that note, I'm going to take it a step further and offer a free weekly gathering for all Starseed, Lightworkers, anyone who's interested, to talk about this information, to share your own stories about Atlantis, to share your activation, to share your memories, to share what stands out for you. We will look at the book, because I think the visuals are important, but it's not just about that. It's for anyone who just wants to talk about Atlantis and help each other learn, connect, and feel empowered with this information. It's free. It's going to begin March 21st. That is a Thursday, and will occur every Thursday. If you cannot attend live, no problems, because you will receive a downloadable recording of each of the gatherings, and you can use the information that way. So that's what we're going to do, is we're going to take this information about Atlantis, and we're going to invite anyone who's interested to come and share and make the best of this energy right now, because we have a lot of choices right now, and we can support each other.
Well, that's great. How can they contact you?
You could go to my website, which is consciouscoolchic.com, or I'll also post it in the Starseed community, in the Ning community as well.
Oh, on our Starseed forum?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so go to starseedhotline.ning.com, or go to, say the name of your site again.
Consciouscoolchic.com.
Consciouscoolchic. And that's just like all one word?
Yes, yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Cool.
And the information is there, and you can sign up, and more information will be coming as the first meeting, March 21st, starts. And if you're not interested in that, I highly recommend just checking out this book, because there's nothing else like it, and it could activate a lot of information.
Excellent, excellent. And then perfect, perfect timing. As I said, with the sun at right now at the mark of Atlantis, that's just perfect. And
it really is, yes. Thank
what
you.
What Anastasia said about discovering the pyramids under the Atlantic Ocean, so, I mean, that's in the Bermuda Triangle. That's great. Perfect timing, Molly.
Thank you for letting me share this. I hope that other people find it interesting, and, yeah, there's a lot of good information here for us to explore together.
Okay, and the name of the book, again, is Atlantis?
Inspiration for the Future, and the author, if you'd like to search, is Walter F. as in Frank Laredo.
Okay, excellent. Well, Molly, thank you so much for sharing that exceptionally timely piece of information with us.
Thank you again.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Lavendar.
I'm here.
Yes, well, welcome to Astrology 101, and Lavendar has a little introduction here, and so you take it away from here.
Okay, well, many of you know that I have been studying astrology for about 30 years. I first got interested when I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and when my fiancé died on my wedding day, of course, it devastated me. And I went in search for answers. I wanted to know what happened to him after he died. I was in search of reincarnation. I was in search of just a lot of answers. And I wound up in Santa Monica, California, and I went to the school of Atlantis. I studied the Atlantean astrology at the Academy of Atlantis. And while I was there, I really understood that your destiny, your blueprint, the energies of your physical body, your soul records, there was a place that you could tap into that. And one day, a woman came, and her name was Isabel Hickey, and she had written a book called Astrology, a Cosmic Science. And she was the most interesting woman I had ever heard in my life. And I bought her book, and after all these years, I still refer to her book. And so when Arielle approached me about having this show tonight on astrology, I immediately went to her book, and no one can say it better than Isabel Hickey. So I would like to read from her book at this time. So if you've decided to study astrology, welcome. You're starting a journey toward self-understanding as well as gaining the ability to understand how the other fellow operates. Truly, it is a spiritual science. It involves the relationship between the larger universe outside you and the personal universe within. The same energies that function in your personal universe function in the larger one out there. The blueprint we call the horoscope or the birth chart plots the energies that flow in your magnetic field. At the moment of birth, you took into your body with the first breath the vibrations manifested on that day and time at that particular spot on Earth. This basic pattern goes with you throughout life. The birth chart shows our potentials and tendencies. One of our astrological teachers once said, "Man is not what he is because he was born when he was. He was born when he was because he was potentially what he is." It is not because you were born at a certain place or time that you react to influences, but the influences of that moment and that place and space show your potentials that can be actualized in the future. Fate is earmarked in tendencies, not in facts. All anyone can see in a birth chart are tendencies that will become facts if one does not do something to alter them. None of us comes unbound into this livingness. We do not start here, and we do not finish our livingness there. Life is eternal. If we have it in front of us, is it not logical to believe that we may have it behind us too? It is as though we have a built-in bookkeeping system. We have debits, and we have credits. Some of us come into this life with a great deal of capital and our spiritual bank books. This is earned income from a past life. Others come in with a depleted bank account. This is the difference between an easy life pattern and a difficult one. However, there is nothing to stop us from using up our capital and becoming bankrupt or going to work to make up the deficit so we will have a surplus with which to function. The horoscope is a blueprint of our character, and character is destiny. There is nothing static in this universe in which we dwell. We can change by changing our attitudes and patterns of behavior. In so doing, we change our destiny. Yes, the blueprint or birth chart shows your character and your personality pattern, your human nature, but you are spirit too. The stars impel, but do not compel. An understanding of planetary influences allows you to take your life into your own hands and intelligently utilize the planetary influences that will help you in your evolution, if you but will. Astrology deals with symbols. The signs of the zodiac are symbols of great and potent forces. The physical planets are but the outer forms through which soul emerges, which the soul energies manifest. It is these energies that affect us, not the physical planets. When you meet a person, you are not affected by his physical body, yet you respond to his character and personality to your benefit or detriment. So it is with planetary energies. Let us consider your horoscope to be a roadmap. It shows the conditions that you're going to meet in life. Some of the roads on which you will travel will be smooth and easy if you have built them well in the past that your personality does not remember. Some of the roads will be in poor condition and need repair. If you repair them and put them into good condition, your vehicle will not break down and cause you difficulties and delays. Always the idea of rebirth raises the question, well, if I have lived before, why do I not remember and know? Your personality is new, but not the soul. The soul is the unit of evolution. The personality is the unit of incarnation. When you become conscious of who you truly are, a soul using a personality through which to function, you will remember. Another thought worth pondering is this one. How much do I consciously remember of what I have lived in this lifetime? As you will learn later in your study of astrology, the knowledge is in your subconscious self. Your subconscious self has hidden in it the sum total of all your experiences to date. You will find as you study that you will be developing your intuitional faculties, for you are dealing with powerful energies that will aid in your spiritual ongoing. How much you get out of this study depends on how much you put into it. It is security invested in your spiritual bank book upon which you can draw in any crisis or experience where understanding is needed. If you have not studied for a long time, the study of astrology will be a means of removing the rust from your brain, not only in one area, but others as well. New pathways or grooves in the brain are made with every new study you take up. There is an actual expansion of dormant brain cells when you make new pathways of comprehension in your gray matter. The first part of astrological study involves the use of your memory. The signs and the planets that rule them must be memorized, though I would like to add the world visualized. Dwelling on the symbols, pondering their meanings, meditating on these energies will bring you in contact with the power behind the symbols. Remember, any knowledge gained through outer study takes you as far as your conscious mind. There is a superconscious mind beyond that area where you can gain direct knowledge from the source of your being. That part of you already is understanding, is wisdom, is knowledge now. Astrology is one of the means of knowing that self. So let's be on our way. Godspeed, Isabel Hickey. I wanted to read that because I adored her so much, and I have used this book for many, many years. It's the only book, really, that I take the time to use at any given time, because the way she writes in this book, she takes all the planets through all the houses. She takes them through all aspects that you would ever need to learn about astrology. So with that, Arielle, I'll turn it back over to you. And then a little bit, I would like to talk about Moon Void, of course.
Okay. So if you have opened up your new browser window and navigated to our headline news page, which is on starseedhotline.com, and the way you get there is just to click the scrolling banner on our homepage, and there you will see a sample chart, which was actually run for about 9:30 this morning, because this sets up what we call a natural wheel. So first of all, if you're looking at this chart that's on the website, you'll notice that there's a yellow ring around the outside of the wheel, and that's where the house cusp degrees are found, and those are the divisions that the point of division between the houses. And then the green ring around the middle there with the numbers, those are the house numbers. So as I'm kind of walking through this chart, I will refer to house numbers and cusps. But starting about 9 o'clock on the wheel, the first house cusp, you'll see, is at 9 degrees 2 minutes of Aries. And Aries is the first sign of the zodiac and on a natural wheel, meaning it is lined up in its natural position because Aries rules the first house. And the energies of Aries and the energies of the first house, as well as the ruler of the first house, which is Mars, have a lot of similar keywords. The first house is basically your emergence into this world. It's how you see the world and how the world sees you. The energy of Aries, if you think of the springtime, when there is that emergent life, when the seeds pop up above the ground and there's that rush of energy that holds promise of a life cycle, and therefore Aries being the first sign has that same kind of emergent energy. And it is about leadership and also being ruled by Mars, and it's important to kind of remember and as you listen, you're probably going to want to listen to this over and over again, but Mars rules the first house, and the energies of Mars, it's the masculine sign. Mars is about action and go out and do. It's the you know, kind of primal male energy. And therefore, Aries also rules war and conflict and competition. Each sign has a high side and a low side. It has the higher expression and a lower expression. So it's important to understand that no sign is better than any other sign, because it depends on how you use it. It's like a car. You can drive it perfectly and get maximum performance, or you could run into a fence post if you're not doing a very good job with navigation. So understanding that the high side of Aries would be the initiator, the person who lights the fuse, who starts the fire, who gets people going, it's a leader, the pioneer, the explorer, all of those energies. And then on the lower side of Aries, it can kind of cycle down into a me first, and everything is about me, and competing for everything. So obviously everyone wants to get to the higher expression of each sign. So I think I'll just continue around and go house by house, unless, Lavendar, you want to interject at any time.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. So the second house, which on this chart, the house cusp is 1349 Taurus. Taurus rules the second house. And the second house is about values and belief systems. It's about your possessions, your material possessions, your money. It has to do with abundance, or your values or beliefs in anything that has to do with acquiring and possessions. Now, Taurus is ruled by Venus. So if you think Venus is the feminine planet, and being of the negative polarity, which is not negative like bad, but negative as it draws to you, I kind of describe Venus as the, come here and peel me a grape. You imagine the goddess lying down on the lounge there and drawing everything to her, whereas the masculine of Mars would go out and get it. So there we have the balance. And if you think about a life cycle where you enter the life, and sure, as a baby, everything is about me and my needs and what I want, and I want it now, and all of that brand new energy. And then as you go through the wheel, you'll find that it parallels your travels, not only through one life but several lifetimes. So by the second house, you're starting to form what you think about this world and what you value and what you believe in. So Venus, Taurus, and the second house are united. Moving to the third house is one of communication. On this chart, the cusp is 12 Gemini, and it might help to get familiar with what these little glyphs for the planets look like. And Gemini, it rules information, communication, writing, and you think about the life cycle. Once you start forming your values and belief systems, then you start to communicate and exchange with others. So the third house is very, very much about communication and writing. It also rules mechanical things, electronic things. And the planet Mercury rules the third house. And if you think about Mercury in mythology, Mercury was the winged messenger carrying the message. And Gemini is also about duality, being, the twins. And then moving on to the fourth house. The fourth house is about home and family. And on this chart, it's 5 degrees, 25 minutes of Cancer. And Cancer is the ultimate Earth Mother kind of sign. It's about nurturing. It's about family. It's also holds a lot of feminine qualities because all of the water signs are feminine. And so there's intuition and understanding. But it is about family and your base of operations. And it's very important to have your base of operations be safe and secure and nurturing. And this is ruled by the moon. So, and again, the moon is about women. And what I'm going to do here, I'm just going through and giving you the basics of what each house is for and what rules that house. And then we'll get into a little bit more details after I get through this. So the fifth house is about things that you create, things that you would put your name on, and that would be anything from children to art, entertainment. It also rules gambling, amusement, good times, and it's ruled by Leo. And Leo is ruled by the sun. So Leo, of course, is a fire sign. It is about leadership. And people with the strong Leo placements would be, they like to be in the front, they like to be leading, and they like to take care of and provide like a parent would for their children. And it is ruled by the sun, so that makes it a masculine sign and house. And then the sixth house on this chart, it's 217 Virgo, sixth house ruled by Virgo, and it is about your daily work, your daily routine, and health. So Virgo is associated with health and service, and it is also ruled by Mercury. Am I correct, Lavendar? I'm just like blanking, thinking, oh my gosh, yes it is.
Yes it is.
Okay. there are some houses that are dual ruled, meaning the planets rule more than one house. So Virgo is about service. It is also about perfection, and it is a feminine sign. So placements in Virgo would tend to accentuate the feminine, and with that comes the healing. And Virgo's very organized, very analytical. And this really helps when you are organizing your day. Now, the seventh house on this chart is 902 Libra. This is about your relationships, your one-on-one relationships. It can be romantic or simply your friends, your acquaintances, you and your teacher, you and your lawyer, you and your doctor. Any one-on-one relationship. So ruled by Libra, of course, Libra is about two sides in balance. Libra is the peacemaker, and the it's about also justice and harmony. Libra imparts an innate, inherent love of peace and harmony. So that is the seventh house. Now, the eighth house on this chart is 1349 Scorpio. The eighth house rules sex, death, regeneration, other people's money, and it is the house of psychic, mystical things, and it is also about transmutation, and it also rules magic. And when you think about it, I mean, magic is simply the transmutation, so it's just a different term for the same kind of energies. It's ruled by Scorpio, and this, again, is a water sign. So all the water signs, which is Scorpio, Pisces, and Cancer, and you don't have to remember all this at one time, but this just lets you know that this is where intuition and psychic ability are accentuated. And also, Scorpio is a very passionate sign, and not only talking about your romantic type of involvements, but Scorpio energy, there's no gray area. You love it or you hate it. you passionately love it or you passionately hate it. There, Scorpios are, like I said, there's no real gray area there. It's one extreme or the other. So keeping that, it's very powerful energy, and making sure you keep it to the up spiral side can accomplish great things. The next house, the ninth house on this chart, is 1205 Sagittarius. Sagittarius rules the ninth house, and it is ruled by Jupiter. Oh, and I forgot to mention that the eighth house is also ruled by Pluto and Mars. The ninth house ruled by Sagittarius, and Sagittarius is ruled by Jupiter. The ninth house is the point of the highest truth, freedom, justice, spirituality, religion, the higher mind, philosophy. It's also about long-distance travel and publishing. So you can see that each sign encompasses a lot of different things. And as we're going around the life cycle here, you know, you get to the seventh house and you're getting, you know, relationships and romantic partners. And then the eighth house, you learn about the creative spiral. In the ninth house, then we come to the higher mind. And Jupiter is a ever-expanding, limitless kind of energy. So the qualities of the ninth house are like that, where Sagittarius hates restriction and is always seeking the higher truth and the higher meaning, and then the meaning above that, and then the meaning above that, and very philosophical kind of pursuits. And then the 10th house is about your career and what you do in public. It is ruled by Capricorn. Capricorn is ruled by Saturn. And if you think of the planet Saturn, it's really kind of the opposite of Jupiter, because Saturn has rings around it. So Saturn is about containing. It is about boundaries. It's about limits. It's about staying between the lines. So it's more like the authority figure, the father figure, that it tests you. It's about responsibility and duty. And the sign of Capricorn, being an earth sign, there is a real strong connection of groundedness there. And let's see if there's anything else I should say about the 10th house.
It's about employers and the amplifier of your personality as the public looks at you for what you do. It's professional career. It's your reputation.
Right. So there is an element of, you know, propriety. And doing things that would be under public scrutiny, so you want to make sure you cross the T's and dot the I's. Now, the 11th house is about hopes, wishes, and dreams, but it's also about humanity and humankind and freedom, and it's ruled by Aquarius, and Aquarius is ruled by Uranus. And the planet Uranus, of all of the planets in the solar system, all the other planets spin with the north-south axis. But Uranus, it's east-west. So it's rotating on its side. It's different from everybody else. And consequently, the electromagnetic field of Uranus is like kind of sporadic and spastic. It's and it's unpredictable. So that is the quality of Uranus. It's things out of the blue, and it is also, like I said, it's about freedom. Aquarians cannot stand to be restricted, because that energy is just, it's impossible to contain. Whereas with Capricorn, ruled by Saturn, it is all about staying between the lines and propriety, and Uranus is about total freedom. And the age of Aquarius, which just started in December, it is about freedom, it's about truth, and an upward spiral. It's about brotherly love, sisterly love, and your part in humanity. So it also rules technology, because if you think about the electrical part of technology. So it's also rules technology as well as crystals, because crystals are a form of advanced technology if you know how to use them properly. And it is also the place where the sun is right now at, of course, this morning it was only at 24, but by now it's activating the 25th degree, and this is where the mark of Atlantis is as we speak right now. And, of course, Atlantis is about the proper use of technology and power, and it is about the balancing, and those are all things about Atlantis that I might be getting a little bit too much detail here. So I'm going to go now to the 12th house, which is on this chart 2 degrees of Pisces. And this is about service to others, often expresses itself through sacrifice. It is the sign of selflessness, which is in contrast to Aries, which is very self-centered, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because I'm in Aries too, so but that's, you know, the lower side of Aries. But Pisces is ruled by Neptune, and this is the house that is concerned with, as I said, service to others, service to groups of people. It is also about spirituality and dreams and visions. There's a lot of psychic qualities of the 12th house, again, because it's a water sign. And this goes from visionaries, and there's a very fine line between visionary and illusionary, and knowing how to tell the difference is really important. This is ruled by Neptune, and Neptune is very much about spiritual service and intuition. This is also where your soul records are kept. So when you have planets that are transiting your 12th house, it is going to present a lot of things from your own soul records that are maybe unresolved, or things that are tools that you can use. So that's the nutshell of the houses, the planets, and the signs that rule them.
I'd like to say something, Arielle, about that 12th house.
Okay.
It's the house of drawn shades, that which is hidden. And
right.
It rules hospitals, institutions, and prisons.
Right, right. And I'm sure that there are other facets of other signs that I maybe didn't mention, but they are all pretty extensive in what they can affect. Now, if this were your chart, this is your birth chart, when the planets are always in motion, and if today, let's say that the sun is at galactic degree in Aquarius, at 25 Aquarius, if that happened to be in your 12th house, Lavendar, how would you explain that? Sun in Aquarius in the 12th house, which is on this chart, Pisces.
Okay, the sun in the 12th house would be a time when you do reflection. You'd want to go maybe do hypnotherapy, regression. It's a time when you sit kind of set back and review your life. It's when your soul records can come up in your sleep, and then when it crosses the ascendant into your first house, then you're kind of ready for a new expression for yourself. Whenever the sun goes into the 12th, I always kind of want to kick back and reflect on what I've been doing for the past year. That's what I do when the sun goes into my 12th.
Okay. So now there are countless combinations of what a particular planet in a particular sign in a particular house, and then with our galactic astrology, based on your discovery of star markings, it gets really, really exact. So, and we're not going to go into all that, because that is not astrology 101. But the point that I really most want to make is how very important it is to know, number one, your own chart, your own natal chart, and to know where the planets are today and how they are affecting your natal chart. If you could think of your natal planets as billiard balls on a pool table, when something lines up in a certain angle and you got a clear shot at these two things connecting, that is when your daily transits will reveal so much to you. Because if you don't know and you go out and you have a day where every little thing is just getting on your nerves, and you know, you get every red light and somebody takes your parking spot and all the little things that can happen that can just be so irritating, and they pile up on you all day long where you just want to snap at everybody, I guarantee if you go back and look at your daily transits to see what is activating your Mars, because Mars has a quick temper, and you can react to that rather than respond to that. And I learned a lot of astrology in retrospect by checking my daily transits. I'd experience the day, and I was like, wow, where did that come from? And then I go home, and I look at my transits, and sure enough, I've got Mars squaring something else or something else that is in aspect to my Mars that is setting this energy up. And two things that happen is that you can let it roll off your back and realize, oh, just a Mars transit. It'll be over in 2 days. No big deal. By the same token, if you had a Venus transit interacting with your Jupiter, you might go out and spend money that you can't really afford to spend, because Venus and Jupiter just, they want pretty things, and there's no limit. Sky's the limit with Jupiter. So it is some examples of how you can navigate just on a daily basis by knowing your daily transits. And I'm going to tell you how to get those here in just a minute. Now, when you meet somebody or you have someone in your family and there is either an issue of great resonance or total no resonance, if you can look at that other person's chart and see where their planets are, you understand them so much better. When you, if there's someone at work or someone in your life that is always trying to boss you around and run the show, chances are you're going to find a lot of fire in their chart, and that's natural for them. So you can't really resent them for being who they are. By the same token, if there's someone who they just can't make a decision and they always want someone to lead them around by the hand, you may find planetary support for that kind of a personality. And it really helps you understand that, you know, this person can't really help, because they're being true to their natural state. By the same token, you are being true to your natural state when you find that, oh, I just really love doing this, and you go look up your planets and you say, okay, and this is why. So it kind of gives you a very deep insight. Now, to track your daily transits, there is a service that we have been using for at least 20 years that I know of, and it's called Astronumeric Service. And they have an 800 number. It's 800-627-7464. They're in Ashland, Oregon. And if you call them up and tell them you want 12 months of daily transits, you give them your exact birth information, and really to get the most accurate printout, you should know your exact birth time. And do tell them that you want the Koch House System, which is K-O-C-H, because, as Lavendar will tell you, that is what is more attuned to starseed. Is that the way you would put it, Lavendar?
Yes, it just holds a better resonance for mathematically being in tune with the way we track the planets.
Okay. Now, what you will get is a little notebook, printed out, a little spiral-type notebook, and it'll each page will be a week with each day individually. And there's a reference book that goes with this. You don't have to know anything about astrology to get this going. But by doing this, you will passively be learning astrology as you just become familiar with how the energies feel after you read about it time after time again. Then pretty soon you know the energy without even looking it up. But the reference book that goes with this is called Planets in Transit. It's written by Robert Hand, H-A-N-D. And I did a quick search, and it's all over the Internet. I think there's even some downloadable versions. But it is the definitive reference book for tracking your daily transits. And then what you do is when you get this little book from Astronumeric, and I think it's about $22 for a whole year's worth of information, it has your natal planets on the left half of the page, and it has your progressed planets on the other half of the page, which we may not talk about progressed because we're just kind of concentrating on the basics here. And then at the very top across the whole page, it'll tell you which house, which one of your houses the current planets are in. So when the, let's say, you know, Mars is in your seventh house, there will be a lot of activity around relationships. And if there is any kind of little silent landmines that have been planted in your relationships, sometimes Mars will bring those up, and then you get a chance to resolve them and deal with them. But you look it up in the book. You just look on one day, and you'll see, I'm looking at my own thing here, Mercury trine Uranus. So then you go to the reference book, Planets in Transit, and each chapter has to do with the planets in order. So you just go to the Mercury chapter, and there's about two or three paragraphs on each transit, and you look up Mercury trine Uranus. And that the trines are very favorable flows of energy, which you will learn from reading this book, so I don't have to go into all of what the different aspects will, what kind of energies they set up, because you're going to see that in the book. But basically, Mercury trine Uranus, this is a very active day mentally. Your mind works very quickly, and you may get flashes of understanding and inspiration. Thoughts may come out of nowhere. You may hear from somebody that you haven't heard from in a while. It's about communication and this. Think about the energy of Uranus that I explained. That kind of, it's like lightning. Comes out of nowhere and then it's gone. So it's, you get that kind of flashing because Mercury is about your mind and how your mind works. So then you can look and see which house each planet is in and read about that. And by doing so, you will gain so much understanding, not of only yourself, but you kind of learn to when you look at things from a higher perspective, they don't get the best of you. Like if Saturn, which is that planet about boundaries and limitations, and this is not a bad thing because everybody has to have their boundaries and what they'll put up with and what they won't put up with. But when that is on your moon, or your moon is on your the transiting moon is on your Saturn, sometimes it makes you feel very depressed or lonely or isolated or pessimistic. And if it is with the transiting Saturn, that's going to last a little bit longer than if it was the other way around. But if you went through a couple of months of feeling this way without knowing, hey, it's just transiting Saturn sitting on my moon, then you don't have to run and get a prescription for Valium or you know, whatever. You don't have to beat yourself up because you can look in this book and then find out how to make the most of this energy. because it doesn't have to be, you know, beating you up from day to day. You can find the instructions, if you will, in the reference book on how to make the most of this. So,
Arielle, I'd like to say something.
Yeah, I was just gonna...
if you go to Astronumeric, there's something on the side that says astrocartography. And this is a wonderful, wonderful system. I first found out about it in 1977. I met Jim Lewis, who created it. They'll send you a map of the world, and with your birth information, it will tell you the best places for you to function on the planet or to visit. And the ideal place that you could go is called Jupiter Midheaven. So when I found it, I said, okay, where is my Jupiter Midheaven? And I found the line, and it went right down through New York, Florida, Santo Domingo, in Dominican Republic, and then it stopped on Aruba. And I went, Aruba, that's where I'm going. And I went there, and I lived there for 9 years. And I can attest to astrocartography. It has been absolutely marvelous. My Saturn line runs through California, so I just really always dreaded going there. So I would go and rent a house at Catalina, and then I would fly over to have my meetings and coming back. So, and of course, then I experienced Natalie Wood's death there on Catalina. So how far did I get away from Saturn? Not very far. So astrocartography from Astronumeric, I just wanted to add that because it will really help you discover the best places to visit and the best places to live on the planet. And they'll send you a little book that goes with it. You also ask for natal and progressed, because the natal chart will be printed, and the progressed chart will be an overlay that you put on it. Okay, now back to you.
Okay, so I am not positive that Astronumeric's of their web address, but I suppose you could just Google Astronumeric Service. And if you see that this number, 627-7464, is on the website, then you've got the right place. And they're, as I said, they're out of Oregon. And I don't want to give you too much if your head is already spinning, but I just will mention, because you might be wondering about the colored lines in the middle there, and these are the aspect lines. And whenever, remember the analogy with the billiard balls on the pool table? When something is lining up in on this chart you can almost tell it's a blue line, that is a trine, and a trine is a very favorable flow of energy. The planets work well together, and it also indicates a kind of karmic credit in the bank account, as Lavendar was reading from Isabel's material. So whenever there's a blue line, it's a trine, and a lot of programs put a little triangle on there so you know that it's a trine. It is 120 degrees apart, and the trines, as I said, is a very favorable flow of energy, and meaning that there's not a lot of work that you need to do in those two areas because you've already done it. You've already completed your diploma in that particular respect. Now, the red lines are squares. They are planets or placements that are 90 degrees apart, and this sets up friction. But friction is just energy, and whether you use it as fuel in your vehicle or you let it beat you up, that choice is up to you, and that's why it's really important to understand. And this will be where energy exists in your chart. It's usable energy, and you can use it to propel yourself or to shoot yourself in the foot, kind of. The green lines are sextiles, and they're 60 degrees, so they're half of a trine. They're also favorable, not quite as strong as the trine, but you could think of it as the trine's little brother or sister. So that's also an easy flow of energy. And then on this chart, there's one yellow line, and that's an opposition. And oppositions can be about opposition, or they can be about balance. And again, it's up to you which way you take it. So I think that's about as far as I want to go, unless you want to add something to what
yes,
I said.
Yes, I'd like to say that when you have your chart done and you look at the center of the chart and you see all the blue lines and red lines and yellow lines, green lines, this forms a pattern. This is a blueprint. Think of it as your personal crop circle chart. This is your personal crop circle. It's a symbol. You can laminate it. You can stick it on the refrigerator. You can look at it daily. And what happens? Something happens within your DNA structure because it knows your chart. And I must say that when I was taken aboard ship and they took one drop of my blood and they threw my chart up on the screen, and it showed exactly where the planets were when I was born, and they took it from my blood, I have to tell you, I came back and I stared at the ceiling for about 3 days. It just froze me in time, because then I knew that this 25, 26, and 27 degrees that I'd been tracking for so long was really done astrologically through the bloodlines on the planet. It was a very big aha moment for me. It changed my world. It changed my life. And because of it, now I'm able to take this information and have sessions with people with their charts, and it gives me an indication of the soul records and your cosmic bank account and the credits that you have there. I find so many people that come to me, they don't know that they have a cosmic bank account, that they've lived so many wonderful lifetimes, and those credits have been stacking up. You know, in metaphysics, all we really hear about is, oh, the karma, and you got to work off your karma, and you got to pay for it, and you got to pay for it. There are credits sitting over there in your cosmic bank account. You know, all the lifetimes that you've had haven't been, you know, totally disastrous. There's been some wonderful lifetimes. And through those cosmic credits, you can tap it. You can zip that credit card of your soul, ask it to come up front and center, and use some of those attributes. I'm finding people that have latent abilities in science, in art, in music, all kinds of things they didn't know that they had, to say, oh, yeah, well, I've always kind of been interested in art, but I just never did pick up a paintbrush. It's those things that linger back in your subconscious, and then if you want to bring them up, you just, like I said, you just zip that credit card of your soul and say, come and come now. So I really have enjoyed so much that we've taken the time tonight to do this, you know, Astrology 101. But I must say that I have kind of jumped in my life to, you know, Astrology Galactic 404 with this new formula of the 25, 26, and 27 degrees. And a lot of you that are listening to this show have had your charts done. And it shows the travel within your soul pattern. And I'm finding a lot of people have been incarnating from Atlantis. There's a lot of people that come from the Cathar records, the Druids, the Native American records. And so that now brings me up to the fact that we're going to have another trip to Hot Springs, Arkansas, with people that have markings of crystal mastership and Atlantis and Pleiadian markings. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to you, Ariel, so that you can talk some more about the trip in April, May.
Okay, so if you have had your chart done and you have any one of these markings at any planet at 25, 26, 27, galactic degree, that's what we're talking about, galactic degree in Aquarius or Leo, in Capricorn or Cancer, in Taurus or Scorpio, any one of those six or three pairs of markings indicates that you are part of a soul family with the rites of passage to go to Hot Springs and dig for crystals, to activate your crystal masterships, to further your work on the planet. And we have two groups going this year. And the spots are filling up kind of fast, but we do have still some openings. And we have, gosh, I think between us, Lavendar, we've probably got close to 10,000 charts. So we can't really get through everybody's chart to remember all the people that we've seen with these markings. So if you know that you have them and you're interested, if you feel the resonance for going to retrieve crystals, there are crystals in Atlantis that were coded by the Atlanteans when they fled a doomed continent. They, with their advanced technology, they recorded, just like a computer hard drive, they stored their records in the crystals in hot springs, and they're coded so that only people that have certain genetic, astrological, soul records, that those crystals will reveal the records. Whereas, you know, someone who does not have the markings, they could pick up that exact same crystal and it's just a pretty looking rock. So that's why we are organizing these trips. The one that we did in October was just stellar, to pardon the pun. But we had a lot of wonderful souls that came together, actually recognized each other. It was a gigantic family reunion, and there was so much more about the trip that was empowering beyond just going and getting your crystals out of the ground, be the first person to touch them. That's a thrill in itself. But if you are interested, if this is resonating, if you have the markings on your chart, please contact us. And the email that I want you to use is crystals, plural, C-R-Y-S-T-A-L-S, at starseedhotline.com. And either Tammy or I will get back to you. And if you actually have your chart, go ahead and attach it to the email. And if you don't have your chart, but you really feel the call, then send me your birth information, exact time of birth, your place of birth, your current location as well, because we also track on progress charts for these activations, and then also include your phone number so we can give you a call. And there's one more thing, though, I wanted to say about your basic astrology 101, and that is, if you are planning an event, if you are thinking about starting something, please do not make a move unless you know what your transits are. Because if you put out a lot of work and you're going to announce something either to a small circle or on the internet to a global audience, if you do it without planetary support, you could be shooting yourself in the foot.
Is this a good place to talk about the void, moon void, of course?
As well as Mercury retrograde.
Are
you
going to
talk about that, or do you
want
me to?
Moon void, of course.
You want to talk about moon void, of course?
Yes, because what you just said, people don't understand about moon void, of course, and how things can really affect you. So I would like to, I'd like to read from my pocket astrologer, which is by Jim Maynard. You can also get that at Astronumerics. I don't do a thing without looking at the where the moon is, because as the moon orbits the Earth, it passes through the signs of the zodiac, and every lunar month it travels through all 12 signs, passing through each in more than two, but less than 3 days. And when the moon approaches the end of each sign, it goes beyond its last major aspect or connection with another planet. When this happens, and until it moves to the next sign, the moon is called void of course. This period is a time when we can feel uncomfortably disconnected and without direction. It is therefore an ideal time for centering ourselves. The void of course condition may occur for only seconds or minutes of time, or it may last a day or two. It all depends on the locations of the planets and their interactions at the time. When the moon is void of course, it is wise to avoid making important decisions. Judgment at this time is probably faulty. Decisions tend to be unrealistic, subject to factors unknown at the time. New paths are likely to be plagued with false starts, errors, and unexpected hassles. During Moon Void, of course, actions produce unforeseen, surprising results. Creative efforts go in unexpected directions. Contracts, promises, or new laws bring on difficulties. Purchases may prove to be unsatisfactory, or the object simply does not fulfill its intention. Routines involving no decisions will usually go well, but often require corrections later. Delays and frustrations are common. Moon Void, of course, is the time to kick back, let life flow, and avoid putting yourself in the path of difficulties. Presidential candidates Dewey, Nixon, Goldwater, and McGovern were all nominated, while the moon was void, of course. Every presidential candidate from the two major parties in 1900 until 1972 who was nominated while the moon was void, of course, were defeated. Nixon was reelected in 72 when the moon was void, of course, and President Ford was sworn in while the moon was void, of course. Of course, look at what happened to both of them. The important guideline for moon void, of course, periods is to avoid being involved in concerns beyond your spiritual center. Moon void, of course, is a time for subjective, spiritual, non-materialistic concerns. If we have taken the time off from business to give attention to relaxation and our spiritual growth during the moon void, of course, we can more effectively go back to dealing with the affairs of the day-to-day material world once the moon has entered a new sign. I'd also like to say that when I was noticing when people would start announcing their movies, their premieres of movies, if they would do them on void, of course, moon, usually the movie did not last very long. It wasn't a hit. It's like I wish that people would use this void, of course, moon timing for opening new businesses or launching their movies in Hollywood.
Right, because if you do it ignorantly, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but if you just didn't know, and then you could spend a lot of time scratching your head wondering, where did I go wrong? I did everything, you know, I did all the groundwork, I did all this and blah, blah, blah. But you launched it when the tide was out, so you're sitting there on dry ground. And by the same token, when Mercury is retrograde, you get a lot of the same kind of things. The main thing to remember with Mercury retrograde is the prefix RE. You have to redo, replace, rethink, reevaluate. All of that has to do with Mercury retrograde. And that happens three times a year. And it's coming up on February 23rd. It lasts for about 3 weeks at a time. And so this is not a time when you want to buy anything electronic, because remember I said Mercury rules the third house, which has to do with mechanical electronic things. And when the planet appears to be going backwards, if you buy something that is electronic or mechanical, it could be quirky. Also, communications. You could say the sky is blue and the next person thinks you said, how do you do? And that's miscommunication. It's when your brain is tricking you. And I mean, we kind of have a little joke about, oh, Mercury got me. You know, I sent the email to the wrong person. So you really have to be triple redundant. Never sign a contract, launch a new business, anything with Mercury retrograde if you don't want to deal with the consequences. I would add, there is a great little website. It's called zodiacarts.com, and you can, in one click, see where the moon is, when it goes void, of course, what sign it's in. It's also got little indications on what are really good business days. And if you do frequent this site, I would encourage you to make a small donation in appreciation, you know, $5 or $10 or whatever, if you're using it all the time. But it's a great, if you don't have the little, like the pocket astrologer that Lavendar talked about, you can buy the calendar, from Astronumeric as well to go with your other stuff. So however you find out, make sure you know where the moon is if you're going to be doing something that matters to you. And especially understand your transits, because there are some transits that are just excellent for being a springboard to launch you higher than you could have gotten. And then there are other transits where, you know, you picture the guy on the diving board, he takes a jump and the thing snaps in half and he hits the water. So you really want to know which way the wind's blowing if you're going to do something that is really important to you. And I guess that's about as far as I think we can go this evening. And anything to add, Levendar?
No, I think that we're living in some very exciting times, and I've noticed that Mars and Neptune have been running together in the sky, so in the last 2 weeks, there's just, you know, kind of muddle-fuddle in our brains, and we, you know, if you go to the doctor during this last 2 weeks, you might get a misdiagnosis because there's just illusionary energies that have been flowing. I think they lifted probably today sometime, so everybody's going to probably start feeling better now that Mars is out of the influence of Neptune. But we've just kind of had that for the last couple of weeks, and boy, has it been something.
Right, right. And just knowing certain, you know, where the planets are today.
Right.
Just knowing, you know, like when a couple months ago, where people were feeling mad and then sad and then back to angry and then depressed. And it was because of this interplay of major planets running conjunct and mixing energies like that that just could toss you about like a cork on the ocean. But if you know, it's like, oh, this is an external planetary energy. You don't have to beat yourself up. You don't have to blame yourself. You don't have to think, oh, it's my fault. There's something wrong with me. So these tools are so essential. And I think that we will be periodically giving you more layers and layers. But if you just get the daily transits and your astrocartography would be great and the Planets in Transit reference book, you will learn very quickly what the planetary energies feel like, especially when you are dealing with long-term transits. They take you through phases of your life. And by knowing that, you can really make the most of things so that when those planets come back around, you don't have to go back and, you know, clean that closet that you just slammed shut and looked the other way with. So
I noticed the time. I really need to go and prepare to watch the President's State of the Union. So I'm going to have to leave the show right now. But if you want to stay on and answer some questions with people calling in, go ahead.
Well, yes, we have Joseph on the line. I think you might want to just say hi to Joseph. We're going to pick up that call right now. Hey, Joseph.
Hey, how are you all?
We're doing great.
We've missed
Good.
You, Joseph.
Hi. I apologize for not calling in. I've been sick with bronchitis for about the last 6 weeks, and I just haven't felt a whole lot like talking. But it's been so fascinating because as a child, and I shared this with you, I believe, Levendar, when you did my chart, I was under an oxygen tent for at least 2 weeks every winter with this same thing, with this asthmatic bronchitis. And as a matter of fact, it was responsible for my walk-in experience when I was 12 years old. So you talk about having life reviews. This period has been very interesting, remembering all those experiences of being sick as a child and then going through my walk-in experience and everything that's happened after that. So it's been kind of a reminder. But I want you all to know that I have been listening almost every week. I've heard almost every one of the broadcasts. I just didn't feel like I had enough energy to call and share anything. But I'm feeling better now, and I just wanted to tell you all how much I love you and how much I've missed interacting with you. That's being a Gemini, of course. And so that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Joseph. You know, we sent you the Emerald Ray, I believe, last week.
Oh, well, that's when things started getting better. I didn't get to listen last week, but that really is when things start breaking, and that's fascinating. Okay, thank you very much.
Well, great. We're so glad that you're on the mend and getting back to your normal, wonderful self, Joseph, and we thank you so much for calling in.
Well, you're so welcome. You know, I moved to Paradise a couple of years ago, but I'm up at 7,000 feet, and my doctor here said, you know, I don't even know how you're functioning here. He said, this is really too high for you. And then we had this incredible cold spell, and it's been going on all this time. Been down to like 20 below zero at night.
Oy.
And not ever getting up above freezing during the daytime. So I'm sure I chose this where and when to go through this experience. But I've had enough. Thank you very much.
Right. Well, you know, it's time to recover, and spring is coming. So we're just so glad
yes.
to hear from you. And I do thank you for calling in, Joseph.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I really want to know more about the trip to Hot Springs, because I'm really drawn to go with you all, and I believe I qualify. So let's talk about it.
Okay. We'll do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Much love. And I'm going to go listen to the broadcast as well.
Okay. Great. Thanks so much, Joseph.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye, dear.
Okay. Well, we don't have any other callers with questions. So, Lavendar, I know you need to track what's going on with our country and the presidential address. So we're going to sign off now to give you that opportunity. And I do want to thank everyone for listening, and also thank Fiona and Chris and Anastasia and Tammy and Velva and all of our wonderful Starseed listeners and Rose on the forum. So we'll be back next week, and you all take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.